Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
Is Alabama the greatest college football team of all time? Well, their coach, Nick Saban, is officially the greatest college coach of all time after winning his 7th national title. Amazing. Even more amazing, when Saban's playing career ended at Kent State in 1973, he was set to go out with his degree into the real world. But he had to stay at Kent State for his wife to finish up her last year of school. That's when head coach Don James talked Saban into joining his staff. Saban reluctantly did it because he had nothing else to do. He never wanted to be a coach. The rest is history. Stan Weber's here to talk about Doug Peterson getting fired from the Eagles and if their plan is to hire Chiefs passing game coordinator Mike Kafka. I think Kafka is far and away the best head coaching candidate on the Chiefs staff. We'll see what happens. Is Nick Chubb or Kareem Hunt the bigger threat to the Chiefs in the playoffs? It's a hard question to tackle. Pun intended. And it's time for Mayor Q to come clean in Kansas City and lift all the restrictions. Even Andrew Cuomo's doing it in New York. Now we've learned Mayor Q has deceivingly been going to Chiefs games this year without letting anyone know. I'm actually good with that. Let's just change the rules for the rest of us and get on with it. It's all today on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Brought to you by Buck Roofing and Construction. Online at rbuckroofing.com. Ron Buck is Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, and Manhattan's finest residential and commercial roofing specialist. No job too big, no job too small. 384-2680 is the number. If you give him a call, you'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. Back9development.com. Back9 Development's a real estate development company and a licensed general contractor specializing in custom building. If you're looking for a new home, check out some of the beautiful homes that Back9 has built at back9development.com. Wow, are they gorgeous. TJ and his company are really onto something special right now. Beautiful new homes, custom homes being built, and now the condo complex, the Solheim at Grand Mere at Colbert Hills Golf Course in Manhattan. Perfect second home, great place for the kids to live while they're in college, or an investment or rental property. $249,000 and up, upscale condo living on the 10th hole at Colbert Hills Golf Course. They're taking commitments and reservations right now at back9development.com or call TJ at 785-236-0161. 236-0161 for TJ and the good folks at back9development.com. Do it. If nothing else, just go online and dream a little bit. Go look at some of the homes they've built and the developments they have going on at back9development.com. And Elite Energy, part of Elite Automation. Elite Energy has the equipment and technology to hook up to your building without any purchase or cost to you. They'll come in and read where your energy is being spent. Then they'll give you really good advice on how to spend it better. When they save you money, you share the money you save with them. There is no cost. EliteAutomate.com. This is an absolute no-brainer. If you manage, own, or operate any kind of a commercial building, school, church, office building, anything like that, EliteAutomate.com, a sponsor from day one right here at Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. We got a lot today. Greatest coach of all time, maybe the greatest team of all time. Chiefs and Browns. Are the Chiefs going to be losing a couple of coaches? And it's time for Mayor Q to come clean on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Hit it!
Sports. Politics. Life. Joslyn's Jewelry presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Our conversation is with Stan Weber, all things football, after Alabama has won in very impressive fashion the College Football Playoff National Championship. Doug Peterson out with the Eagles. What does that mean for a Chiefs assistant? And, of course, the Chiefs and Browns. All topics today with Stan Weber on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Hi, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing great, Kevin. It's an awesome week of weather here in Kansas City and just so excited for the next round of the NFL playoffs. So, yeah, this is a great time of year.
We will get to the Chiefs shortly. Let's start with Alabama and an unbelievably impressive win over Ohio State. I think this made you and I happy and a lot of other people that didn't think Ohio State should be in this thing. Put it in perspective for me. How great was Bama last night, and has there ever been a better college football team?
Well, they were just so dynamic on offense. They make it look easy, and it is incredible the level of offense that they're able to play. To see a Heisman Trophy winner, who traditionally a Heisman Trophy winner goes to the big games, bowl games, what it used to be, and they would actually play less than their normal level. And then we see Smith just go crazy out here and have 200-plus yards receiving in just one half. I was just disappointed we didn't see him in the second half. But Alabama did a great thing this year. You think about the schedule, Kevin. They played only SEC teams. No easy games at all. Legitimate SEC teams win their two games and go and blow and score near 50 points in almost every game this year. The offense is flawless. They had control of the games. And Saban's won a lot of national championships more than anybody else. But he rarely has had an undefeated team. If you go back and look, usually they stub their toes sometime during the regular season, get a free gift from everybody saying, well, I think Alabama's good, and then bounce back. This team just stayed focused in and playing great the whole time. Now when you talk about the greatest team ever, you know, they do deserve to be in the conversation with the explosiveness they have on offense. But I think there's enough weakness on defense that we got to be careful. And I would say this right off the bat. I think last year's LSU team and this year's Alabama team are mirrors of each other. They both just had dominant performance, unbelievable offense, great pedigree. Alabama much more than LSU. But I thought that LSU team last year had the right to be in the conversation as the greatest team ever. Alabama does again this year. I'd love to see those two teams play. So a little too hard for me to say greatest ever, but they definitely deserve to be in the conversation. The problem that we have in college football, though, is it's turned into arena football. And to see 2 years in a row where quarterbacks throw for a record number of yards, like 450 yards is no big deal. I think about Joe Burrow last year, 5 touchdown passes, like it's easy, and then you can take your foot off the accelerator even. Could have had much more. These teams in the last 2 years in the championship game could have scored 70 points if they wanted to, but they just got tired of doing it. So it's not as good a brand of football to watch, Kevin. There's just too much offense. Right now, the defenses are not able to keep up with what's going on in the offense. It just takes a little bit away from the college games. You think about the NFL playoff games, I thought they were much better than what we saw in the college playoffs, the 2 semifinals and the finals. And it's because it's turned into arena football. Every time you get the ball, you expect to score a touchdown. Even Ohio State scored a ton last night.
It's interesting you say that because we talked through the years, Stan. Look, I love the effort level in the NFL. I think it's better than all the other professional sports. But I always thought that watching college football, the players were actually playing harder, and it was maybe more entertaining or better to watch for several years. I think that's flipped. I think you're right. I think it's arena football. So you're smarter than me, buddy. Is there anything they can do? Can they make any rules changes? Is there anything they can do in college football to make it better?
Well, it's a little bit hard to do, but I do think the one rule they could change, it's not going to make a giant difference, but they've got to quit letting the offensive linemen even go two or so yards downfield. They can actually make it to 3 yards downfield when the ball's thrown and still not be down the field. They got to do it like the NFL and say, you've got to stay right at the line of scrimmage. You can't run down the field until the ball's thrown unless the guy catches the ball behind the line of scrimmage. So you take away a little bit of the RPO action where the lineman can't get downfield, and that would help a little bit. But otherwise, there's not a ton of rule changes because I'm going to say this exactly backwards. I think the NFL's too ticky-tacky about, oh, he touched him 5 scrimmage, so we're going to throw a foul, or we're going to call holding, or everything's a pass interference. College football doesn't have that problem. The maximum pass interference penalty is 15 yards. They let him play a little bit more physically, so it's really not an issue there. So I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do. The skill level on the offensive side is so great that I don't know really right now, like, hey, here's a rule. I guess you could you know, not allow holding so much, but gosh, we do not want to see a penalty field game. Right. So that's not a good option.
So unless they've changed something that I don't know about, the ball is still different than the NFL ball. It's smaller. It's easier to throw for college quarterbacks, is it not?
Well, I do believe that it's not as standardized either. There's a little bit more room for what kind of football you use. Different teams use different brands of footballs and are not all exactly the same, but it's not quite as big a bubble as the NFL ball is. So there is a slight difference. But you know, I don't think it really even that is enough to say. Right now, we just got to hope that defense becomes a better part of the game. Somehow, some way, the Alabamas and Clemsons of the world need to figure out that defense still matters. And right now, it's just, you know, Nick Saban was arguing less than 10 years ago that you shouldn't be able to use a no-huddle offense and all this crazy offensive stuff that Mike Leach was doing at Texas Tech and Washington State, et cetera. You know, that's not real football. And now Alabama's leading the charge. So they've bought in completely that it's an offensive football game. The skill level's high. I love football being a skill game. But, Kevin, I still just – I can't get excited about a game when the teams make it into the 50s like it's no big deal, upper 40s. Every time you get the ball, I do not think, oh, this should be a touchdown drive. That's not a good way to watch sports. Even when Ohio State got the ball, I think if the game would have, if Ohio State would have been a little bit closer, they would have scored two more touchdowns. I propose to you. They got a little demoralized. Their offensive ability to compete against Alabama's defense, they would have scored two more touchdowns. There's no reason why it wasn't, 58 to 45 or something. Still a differential, still too much offense, but both teams are going up and down the field.
Nick Saban wins his seventh national title. That's the most of all time. He passes Bear Bryant from Alabama, and he credited Bear Bryant after the game and said this would not have been possible had it not been for Bear Bryant. This from a coach that finished playing at Kent State in 1973 and was going off into the real world to just work like the rest of us. But his wife in college, Stan, needed one more year at Kent State in school. So he had to stay there with her. This was an era where people got married in college. And he had to stay with her in 1973. And Don James, the coach at Kent State, said, well, if you're staying here, I'm going to put you on the staff. And he said, well, I got nothing to do. I guess I will. He was never going to be a football coach, and he is now the greatest of all time. That's an amazing story.
Yeah, the twists and turns that you hear about. And then you hear names like Don James, and you just don't have an appreciation maybe for what that name means. He was a big-time coach at Washington, and he busted through that UCLA-USC, winning the Pac-8 or Pac-12 or Pac-10 all the time. He did it even with an African-American quarterback before everyone else would do it. Don James is incredible. Think about him. He was the mentor for Gary Pinkel. So, you know, this guy was an amazing coach who wasn't as famous, and now we see Nick Saban, and it's pretty incredible what he's done. In this era, Kevin, where we can talk about college football right along with the NFL, if we were going to do this segment, we could talk college as long as we talk the NFL. It would be acceptable. College football is a big-time deal. Everyone's buying in. Look at the investment, the money, the TV coverage for every team around the country is just incredible. And yet, it's as dominant as any time we've ever seen. You got to prove it on the field. It's not just a vote. You've got to win semifinal games at times to win a championship. And he's won 50% of the last 12 championships, six of the last 12. Just getting out of the SEC, think how hard that is. He's got to get out of the SEC, SEC West, just winning the West and get going. And yet he's won half the national championships the last 12 years. It's incredible to see. And I do think that right now one of the things we're hearing, one of the themes, because he really appreciated the discipline of this team. He said words like, I love this team. It's about the players, all that kind of stuff. You know, we're really missing out because they're trying to make him a soft figure. You know, Nick Saban, good guy, only looking out for the interest of the players. Well, you know what? Kevin, in this society today where anything, you know, close to tough is just thought of as the worst thing in the world, and the players start tweeting and a coach is awful, if he shows any tough love or discipline or has demands or high standards, Kevin, this guy's the exact opposite. He has all those high standards. People need to think about this. Even in this era, he was the one who was able to get his team all the way through COVID with a hard-ass discipline. That's what he had. It still works, Kevin. You don't have to abuse players. You don't have to say negative things, but you can have high standards, hold people accountable, and you can help people by saying, yeah, I'm trying to help you. I'm helping you be a better person, a better student, a better man, a better father sometime, and it also maybe an NFL player, but you got to do it in a team attitude. You got to try. You can't be opting out and things like that. That's the kind of culture he has at Alabama, and it's so different than what we're trying to push as what we want the culture to be. I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
This is not Mr. Softy.
Right.
He's a hard ass who, yes, Kevin, he does care about people. People who are hard asses and help and push young people to go to a higher standard, be held accountable to levels they never thought about before, and shows them the way to do that and hugs them once in a while as well, they do care about it. So you can push people and still love them as much as anybody else. But I don't think we have that thought through very well in society. Nick Saban, hard ass, finds a way to get through COVID without any of his players being mad about it, any of his players jumping off board and quitting and or whatever we call it nowadays, opting out. It's pretty amazing. I think it's a story that's not being told. Nick Saban's not a soft guy.
No, he's a tough guy. He's an old school 69-year-old tough guy coach, and you know you're watching a great coach when he does, similar to Andy Reid with the Chiefs. Andy Reid just turns his defense over to Steve Spagnuolo. We've seen him a million times. sitting on the bench with Mahomes, not even paying attention to the game because he just turns it over to his defensive coordinator. Saban does that with Steve Sarkisian, who will go on to be the coach at Texas. We'll talk about that somewhere down the road, Stan, as Sarkisian last night at times looked like the head coach, which is when you're Nick Saban, you know you're in complete control and absolutely confident in what you're doing when you allow another coach to just kind of take over like that. So let's finish with this on Alabama. Let's dream a little bit. You and I know the reality of football, Stan. Not a lot of fans want to think about this, that think that there will be a day, but there will be a day when Patrick Mahomes does not have great weapons. He's going to play here so long in Kansas City, there will be a time that his weapons are substandard, probably even within the division. That's just how football works. So if we were dreaming just a little bit, and they could the Chiefs could get Najee Harris to run the football or Devontae Smith to catch the football from Mahomes, if you could have either one of those studs from Alabama, which one do you think would be a better long-term fit for the Kansas City Chiefs?
That's a tough question because you look at the Heisman Trophy wide receiver, and he is so special that it's incredible, and he has a big-time place in the NFL, but how fragile is he going to be? You know, I keep saying, I think he weighs about 160 when I'm watching the game. I just get, and then they go, no, he weighs 175. But I just, you know, he just looks like he's going to be torn apart at some point. So that worries me a little bit. But otherwise, I'd go with the receiver. Najee, I think, is going to be a good back, but he's just going to mesh into the NFL and just be another good running back. You know, one that we note when you're playing the team that he's on, but not one that you're going to talk with like Derrick Henry. I don't think he's in that category. Okay. Last night, some of the decisions he made, I think he wants to bounce it out whenever he can. He wants to try to outrun people and get to the outside. Did you see that negative 3 or 5 yard run he had in the second series of the game? You know, I want to see him stick his foot in the ground and head upfield and maneuver through the tackles and off the edge, off tackle. And it seems like he wants to bounce it out a little bit. Now, is that not, am I trying to say he's a bad player? No, I'm saying he's a great player. But Kevin, there's a lot of great running backs in the NFL that don't get talked about like you do when you go to Adrian Peterson or like Derrick Henry. You know, to be the elite of the elite, it takes something even more, I think. So I just think he's another very good running back in the NFL. So I'd go wide receiver if I got a choice of the guys.
All right, on to the NFL. And a big story in the NFL yesterday, Doug Peterson, who was in Kansas City on Andy Reid's staff for a while, and Super Bowl-winning coach of the Eagles. Super Bowl-winning coaches don't get fired easily. This one did. Look, we know when he was in Kansas City, there was turmoil. There were problems here with Doug Peterson, and Andy Reid was trying the best that he could to find him a job and move him elsewhere. They kind of wanted him out here. Peterson's a different kind of guy, and while he was calling the Philly special and winning the Super Bowl, life was good. Tell me how good you think Carson Wentz can be. Does Doug Peterson bear responsibility for the downfall of Carson Wentz, the quarterback of the Eagles? And immediately after doing this, the owner of the Eagles said, look, it isn't necessarily about Doug Peterson earning getting fired. They have an idea of what they want to do. I think what they want to do is hire Mike Kafka away from the Chiefs, who was the quarterback guru for Patrick Mahomes here the last 5 years, and building him up into what he is, a brilliant, young, 33-year-old head coaching candidate in Kansas City. I think he's got a great chance of landing the Eagles' job because they want to fix Carson Wentz. What do you make all of this?
Wow, it's so complicated, but I will start in a different direction and try to cover what you're asking here. Doug Peterson, as a coach, I think got himself fired in the fourth quarter of the game against Washington. Everyone said, you know, he's going to be okay, and you're going to have a meeting with the owner. And I was watching that game, and I go, that meeting with the owner is not going to go well. Some people think the owner told him to tank to gain 3 more spots in the draft. I don't know if that's true or not. If that's the case, it's a very low-class move to fire him at this point because it was a national story. I think I told you that I bet the owner's phone was blowing up in the fourth quarter with other owners of the 32, their partners, and they chose to have a Sunday night football game. They chose to put Philadelphia and Washington on TV, and they are embarrassing the NFL. I'm sure that the other owners are going, like, what in the heck is going on? Why are you not trying? Not to protect the Giants, just to protect the integrity of the game. If you always try, you don't tank, to put great excitement on the field. I thought he did just a horrible job in the fourth quarter, lost the confidence of his team. You don't ever teach your team to not win. I mean, it's the opposite of Nick Saban. We just talked about Nick Saban. Do you think he would go out and try to just give the game away in the fourth quarter? I don't know what Doug Peterson was doing, but I think he lost his job right there. Now, I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan, and a lot of times you got to put it into perspective when it's an opponent of yours, Kevin. Some of that's the best evaluation. And I wish Doug Peterson would stay as the Eagles coach. I think he's run his course. I never thought he was dominant. He got lucky that things went well with Nick Foles and Carson Wentz and everything else. I just didn't think that he was a dominant coach. He won a Super Bowl. He deserves that credit. But I would like to see him stay because I think his football team has been sloppy this year. They should have won the division, and they basically got fourth place in a bad, bad division. You know, something's wrong. His relationship with Carson Wentz shouldn't have deteriorated to this level, no matter what. I mean, I'm being told by some people that might have some good information that, you know, Carson Wentz doesn't even get talked to by Doug Peterson the latter part of the season. Like, there's just no relationship at all. It doesn't need to be that way. So I'm not sure if that's true. I'm not sure what's going on. But Doug Peterson, Carson Wentz, the whole Eagle organization, the football team, the way they played, was not near what they should be. They should have had an easy run to win the division with the Giants, Washington, and Dallas in the shape that they were this year, just giving losses, you know, just saying, we're awful, take it. And it was the Eagles who weren't eligible to make the playoffs the last week of the season. So I think Doug Peterson had fallen into being a below-average coach. Carson Wentz had fallen into being a below-average quarterback. And I didn't know how he was going to be fixed. Maybe now you can give it a restart button, but you still have Jalen Hurts, who deserves some love. I mean, the guy played pretty well. There's no reason why he shouldn't be in the competition. So they've just got a big salary cap issue. The organization has issues. So I'm not sure where they're going to go, but I think Doug Peterson got fired way more for the last quarter of the season than all the other stuff. Okay. And then will they go to Kafka? You know, that's an interesting statement, because one of the things with Andy Reid is he does such a good job of protecting his assistants, other than Spagnuolo. Like you said, he turned over the defense to Spagnuolo. But all of those offensive assistants, I have trouble sorting out how good they really are. I really do.
Okay,
because we don't know how the organizations run.
Okay, let me reset this here. The Eagles drafted Kafka 10 years ago. Andy Reid was there. He played there for a while. He didn't get in games much, but they know him very, very well. Last year after the season, Doug Peterson and the Eagles tried to hire Kafka as the offensive coordinator. Andy Reid blocked it by giving Kafka a promotion to passing game coordinator in a big raise, and they were able to block the transition to Philadelphia. They tried to bring him in last year to work with Carson Wentz this season. They've tried to hire him before. I don't even know that they're going to look anywhere else, and I'll just say this is my opinion. In all due respect to you, I think Mike Kafka by far is the best coaching candidate on the Chiefs staff right now and might be Andy Reid's best shot of having a really great head coach that came from his tree.
I think that the ties that you talk about with the Eagles are very important. The fact that they know about him and he comes under the Andy Reid tree. I think the Eagles are very likely to go that direction, to have someone who's associated with Andy Reid, because now the appreciation that they have in the organization for Andy Reid is skyrocketed since he's not around. I mean, sometimes you just can't appreciate what you have until you don't have it anymore. And sure, things weren't smooth and perfect with Andy and everything that was going on in the organization. His time maybe had run out, but I do think that they are going to tap in to someone that comes under the Andy Reid tree. You just talked about the knowledge level they have with him. It makes a lot of sense to me that they may go that direction. But what I'm sitting here saying is, which one of these assistants, I mean, is Nagy a great head coach with the Bears? It got him into the playoffs 2 out of the last 3 years, but I don't think, I don't sit and list him in my top 10 coaches in the NFL. So which guys under Andy Reid are really able to be head coaches? I think it's a giant question. I don't think any of them are home runs. They got to prove it by themselves.
Okay.
When you're with Andy Reid's organization, you're going to have success, Kevin. You're going to look good if you're on the offensive staff of Andy Reid, and you deserve promotion.
All right, let's do this, because I think what the Eagles are looking at is Carson Wentz having unfulfilled potential. Would we agree that when Patrick Mahomes arrived here, he was almost completely unpolished, really didn't understand how to play quarterback, and had to be taught a lot because he was never really taught a lot of things at Texas Tech? He just went out and was a gunslinger and you know, threw the ball around. And the one guy they assigned to him from day one, living in his back pocket at every practice, right on his heel, like a caddy to a golfer, was Mike Kafka. For all these years, it's been him. Eric Bieniemy had very little to do with the development of Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid certainly gets the most credit because he's a head coach and we know what his track record is. But it was Kafka that he assigned to Patrick Mahomes and said, every little thing about footwork, release, what you can do, what you can't do. All those times Andy Reid would say, yeah, he throws interceptions in practice because we're telling him to push it and find out what he can't do so he doesn't do it in the games. That was Mike Kafka standing there with him every moment of every practice, of every day, of every film session. I think the Eagles see that, and I think they want some of that for Carson Wentz.
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world, and I have no reason to be down on Mike Kafka at all. I think that he has a great role. You know, they don't talk about him right now because he's not called the offensive coordinator, but I think he has a great role with the Chiefs. I think he should be an NFL head coaching candidate right now, not 3 years from now, Kevin, to kind of work his way further up. You know, we saw Peterson, we saw Nagy. Now you're going to see Bieniemy become a head coach likely. It didn't have to go in that order. And Kafka could go right now. So I'm in with what you're saying. Every instinct I have has positive thumbs up about him and his development with Mahomes and where he is. His ties to the Eagles make a lot of sense. If they happen to choose him over some other candidates, it makes all the sense in the world. I'm just saying, when you're around it, just because you know Andy Reid doesn't mean you're going to be a great head coach. It's hard to be a great head coach. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree.
Is, you know, just like the Cincinnati Bengals have a coach that knows the Rams head coach. You know, so what? Yeah, it's great to have a little bit of learning. Bill Belichick had a lot of disciples go out there, but they're not Bill Belichick. So that's all I'm saying. It's not. You're not printing a bunch of robots that are the new Andy Reid. It's Andy Reid that's magical.
I could be wrong. Somebody's probably run the numbers on this. There's nothing magical about being a coordinator and becoming a head coach either. When you look at the Mike Tomlins of the world and John Harbaugh and a bunch of these people were linebackers coach or secondaries coaches or special teams coaches and became head coaches, there's nothing magical to me that says you have to ascend to offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator to become a head coach. And we're seeing 30-somethings getting hired everywhere, and I can't imagine there's a 30-something anywhere. I mean, this guy was all-academic Big Ten at Northwestern. All right, he was the offensive player of the year. He was a quarterback. He's had all these years with Pat Fitzgerald. He coached under Fitzgerald, and then Andy Reid. I mean, there is no better resume. You don't have to be 55 to get hired. You couldn't build a better resume by 33 than what Mike Kafka has. You just couldn't.
Yeah, like you're saying, you have a lot more detail, which is really great. I'm saying when you say his name, I get a positive feeling. Like, this guy, I want to know more about him. But it sure seems like there's a lot of indicators that he's going to be the real deal to be a very good coach. Right. Now, does that mean he's going to be a dominant offensive coordinator in NFL? Is he going to be a quarterback guru or a head coach? Those are different things, okay? He could be a guy to be the offensive coordinator last year. Okay, let's just say he was with the Eagles during this last regular season like the Eagles wanted to. And you pointed out to everybody the NFL rule. You cannot go steal a coach if he's under contract if he gets a promotion at his own location. You know, if he gets to go up a level, you can't just go nab him and take him as a offensive coordinator. You've got to give him a promotion. If he's a quarterback coach, you can make him an offensive coordinator. But if the team that has him makes him an offensive coordinator or moves him up, you can't do it. So the Eagles, if he were there, I think he would have a big effect on Carson Wentz. I think Carson Wentz would have played better. It's a little harder though, Kevin, when you're building your quarterback. It's a little harder when you have to take a step backwards or sideways or downwards to rebuild. Okay. Alex Smith did it, but it's so rare in the NFL. So that's one of the things that gets scary about Carson Wentz is how is he going to build back up? With Patrick Mahomes, he was unfinished, but he hasn't taken a downward step. And that's the hard thing right now with Carson Wentz. I just don't know. You know, where he's going to go next. But I think he's a very good kid, a hard worker. It'll be good for him to be refreshed. It's going to be good for the Eagles organization because they had a giant cap issue. I mean, he takes so much of the salary cap, and to try to move him on and work it out is not easy duty. So the fact that they got rid of Peterson as a head coach, I think now Carson Wentz can get a new start. And if they do it with a guy who understands quarterbacks, who's helped build Patrick Mahomes, who's had some Eagles ties, has the pedigree you talked about, you know, you mentioned something big. He was around Pat Fitzgerald, and that is a big-time coach.
Yeah.
College, pro level, whatever you want to say. He's doing it the right way. So I'm really high on him to see what he's going to do, but it's not easy to sort your way through the NFL and survive because, man, these coaches at the top are so elite. And then you get muddled into that 8-8 area and just a little slippage, and suddenly you're 6-10 for a year or two, and you're out of here because these owners don't wait very long. So it'll be exciting to see where that goes. There are a lot of Eagles ties, but I'm telling you, Cam, when I watched the Eagles play that last quarter of the game, and you know, we have the best informed announcers, Al Michaels, who talks to the owners, Chris Collinsworth, who's tied in the NFL, and they're going, you know, I think Peterson's going to be fine this year. He's going to take some pressure. He's going to have a meeting with the owner, but he's going to be back next year. When they were saying that, that's usually gold. You just take that information and say, yep, they're right. And I was watching it, and I, when the game ended, I go, I still think Peterson's going to get let go.
Yeah.
And it took a little while, but that was more ugly than maybe a lot of people just watching the game and think was what they did.
They probably did the right thing. My hope was this. My hope was 5 more years of Andy Reid, and then Mike Kafka could be the head coach in Kansas City for the last 10 or 12 years of Patrick Mahomes' career. Does not look like that's going to happen. If he gets hired there, it's unlikely that he'd ever be head coach of the Chiefs. He'd have to get fired by the Eagles for that to happen, because you wouldn't be able to hire him away. So let's take a couple of minutes here, Stan. I know you're busy, to talk about the Chiefs and Browns. Bigger problem for the Chiefs defense, is it stopping Chubb or stopping Kareem Hunt, the former running back for the Chiefs, who says this game is personal for him?
Well, I just wonder, when he says it's personal, will that create a distraction for Kareem Hunt? You know, will he try to do too much? But if you just take that off the board and act like it's not going back to play his old team, I think Kareem Hunt is harder to deal with. But what he has done, just go watch the Pittsburgh video, what he has done inside the red zone, or even the deep red zone, the 10-yard line and in, Kevin, the way he breaks tackles and makes what most players would do, get tackled at the 8-yard line because three guys converge on you from all different angles, and then he's walking in the end zone. I mean, the ability to bust out of tackles with everybody around and the odds against you are amazing for Kareem Hunt. Now, if it's 1st and 10 at their own 35-yard line, Nick Chubb's a better player, harder to stop. But scoring touchdowns is what it's all about. You know, the difference between kicking a field goal from inside the 10, Kevin, and getting a touchdown is night and day for momentum, 4 points, all that kind of stuff. And that's where Kareem Hunt is just lethal. He gets the ball inside the 10, and he is in the end zone so often. It's really incredible, better than anybody else in the NFL. No one is finishing runs inside the 10 to end up in the end zone better. So I say Kareem Hunt's the harder guy to stop in money situations.
Okay, I think I've tapped into what it is I don't like about this game, and I've not wanted the Chiefs to play the Browns now for about 6 weeks. And I know there have been all kinds of other good teams out there that are actually better teams or should be more dangerous, but I think it's unfamiliarity is what has me bothered about this game. And let me explain that for you, Stan, and see if you believe the same thing or think I'm absolutely crazy on this one. If the Chiefs were playing the Colts, we're familiar with Phillip Rivers. We saw what he did Saturday. He had 1st and 10 at the, 45, 50-yard line, and all he needed was really another first down, and they're going to overtime, and he was just dreadful in those last 4 throws. It's kind of what Phillip Rivers does at the end of the game. Lamar Jackson, well, we know what you do with Lamar Jackson. The actual running game with Lamar Jackson is not what gets you. It's the scrambling out of the pocket that kills you, and it's what worked this weekend for the Ravens. The Chiefs do a great job of keeping Lamar Jackson in the pocket so he doesn't have 48-yard touchdown runs. So I was not worried about Lamar Jackson. And if it was the Titans, their defense is so bad, I would have had no doubt the Chiefs were scoring in the 30s against the Titans' defense this week. But with the Browns, I don't know their Achilles. I don't know one predictable thing about them that I can say, absolutely, this is going to happen. It used to be Baker Mayfield turnovers. And you would watch the Browns and say, well, they're going to turn the ball over, and you've got a great chance to beat him because that's what they'll do. But he only had 8 picks this year. Mahomes had 6. I mean, this is not the turnover machine that he's been the last couple of years. I don't know the predictable Achilles heel for this team. Can you please tell me there is one?
Well, there's not, and there's a little bit of variability in all of their play, which, you know, puts the odds against them, because if they fall in a running game, they got to have a good running game. But what happens if the running game doesn't work? We saw the Titans. Derrick Henry didn't run the ball well against the Ravens, and they were in big trouble. You know, Cleveland needs to run the football, but they got 2 guys that they can rely on. Will they be hurt by their offensive line, the injuries they had against the Steelers? But generally, they usually can run the football. Baker Mayfield has stayed away from the mistakes. Jarvis Landry, I think, is a dominant, reliable receiver. The tight ends are running good routes and making catches for first downs. Baker Mayfield seems to be getting play calls that work and staying within himself. He's not only rolling out, everybody acts like the bootleg's the only way he can complete a pass, but he's done a nice job of throwing from the pocket, throwing the ball quickly, just getting a first down, and not throwing the ball into an area of concern and getting intercepted. Defensively, they are solid. The corners are a little bit weaker. We saw against the Steelers that they've had injuries. So what cornerbacks will show up? Will it be the first string guys, backups? It seems like the Achilles heel they may have is in the secondary, that you can throw the ball on them, which is very good for the Chiefs. And that might define the ball game. If the Chiefs can throw and the Browns can do nothing about it, then the Chiefs are going to take advantage and go ahead and win the game. They're the better team. But I do think Cleveland is more solid across the board than people are giving them credit for. Everyone acts like Buffalo. For instance, I'll jump ahead to Buffalo, and everyone's worried about Buffalo. But you saw them against the Colts, Kevin. They're a team a little bit like Cleveland that just doesn't seem to have any weaknesses. Their defense isn't dominant, but they play solidly. I guess you could say the Bills' running game isn't great, but overall, the Bills just play a pretty good game across the board, and then they look for Allen to make some plays here and there, and that makes the difference. Well, Cleveland's really not that much different, Kevin, than the Buffalo Bills. Everyone acts like they're completely different, but they're not. And if Baker Mayfield doesn't throw an interception, which it seems like he's not this year, they're really not that much different than the Buffalo Bills. So I think Cleveland's a legitimate opponent. I'm on record as saying I wanted to play them rather than anybody else, only because Pittsburgh wasn't available, Kevin. That was not one of the options, right? We didn't say Pittsburgh gets to play the Chiefs, but they were the worst team. Pittsburgh really was struggling going into the playoffs, so they actually were the seventh best team. But yeah, Cleveland's the team I wish that the Chiefs would play, mostly because I wonder if they're ready for the mental side of prime time, Kevin. It's more about playoff mentality. Do you know how to play when the pressure's on? Those are the questions I have about the Browns, not their down-to-down play in regular season.
Okay, so you don't check that box the last 2 weeks against Pittsburgh because they had to win. They needed to win to get in, or they probably didn't have to, but as it turned out. But then, they had the playoff game on the road. It didn't check that box because why? Because Pittsburgh is just dreadful?
Well, the first game was just desperation for the Browns. Everybody in that city and everyone who roots for the Browns is just holding on to the hope of we got to make the playoffs and let's don't blow it. And the game ended up being that way. People say it's the Pittsburgh JV and all that. I don't really like that necessarily because they still played a ton of players. You only have 53 in your roster. But it was a desperation game. They had to win, and Pittsburgh really didn't care so much. So I just write that one off a little bit like congratulations. This last game, I think, steps them forward, but they did not play under the pressure of playoff football yet, Kevin. Everything went right at the end, right at the beginning. I mean, they led 7-0 before they could even get nervous. Then they had a 14-0 lead, and suddenly they led 21-28-0, and things were flowing. So when they have things going in their way, if it's like a regular season game, I think Cleveland has answers to compete against the Chiefs, running game, passing game. Baker Mayfield being at Oklahoma helps him. He's been around big-time football, and he's got that bull in a china closet attitude where he's not scared to go win. Okay, so I don't think he's going to have a nervous look on his face. I think if you look at Allen for Buffalo, he's playing at Wyoming. He looks nervous when things get going in the wrong direction for Buffalo. Did you see him in the second half?
He does.
People are saying, oh, he looks a lot more confident this year. I go, you looking at the same face I am?
Right.
That's not confidence. They were worried. They were worried at the end. But I don't think Baker Mayfield is wired that way. Worry is not something that comes into play, and that attitude helps you. He's been around Oklahoma. He's played at a high level. I think that mentality he has, he's not a perfect quarterback. He's not the top five quarterback in the NFL, but it'll help him in a situation. They did have to go re-win the game late in the third quarter and in the fourth quarter by going and playing offense, Kevin. So if you want to look at that, go watch the tape of late third quarter and early fourth quarter and tell me that's when they proved under pressure that they had to make plays, and they did it. I'll buy into that. I think Cleveland's more dangerous with what they did in the third and fourth quarter, but the way that game unfolded, it still isn't like being going into halftime, 17-14. And every play you realize, I don't want to be the guy who is the goat in this game. I do not want to drop the third down pass and we lose to the Chiefs because we have no room for error. You see what I'm saying? There's a whole level of pressure. When you're a tight end 7 yards down the field and Baker fires the ball through the hands of the defensive lineman, have you seen some of those videos where the ball comes out of nowhere? Like the receiver can't even see it and all of a sudden it's on you and now you're down close to the ground. Well, against the Steelers, they just reached down, grabbed it, and said first down. But against the Chiefs, if you start thinking, I got to catch this, I cannot drop this, will they possibly drop it and lead to a punt? I'm just saying, Kevin, a team like Cleveland is just by definition, in my mind, more fragile to this level of play than, let's say, the Ravens will be against the Chiefs. So I think the question marks are more about the internal being of the Cleveland Browns. And if Baker Mayfield can go in there and just, you know, bust people in the jaw before the game, like put your helmet on and I'm going to smash helmets with you like Tom Brady used to, and just says, we're not scared of anybody, then I think Cleveland becomes more dangerous. Obviously, the Chiefs are the better team. Chiefs should win the game if Patrick Mahomes in the passing game goes like normal. But I do think Cleveland's more dangerous than a lot of people are saying. And it's because they can run the football. They have a balanced football team across the board. Like you said, no obvious errors where they just give the game away to the Chiefs. But I'm just worried about playoff pressure. If you're a Cleveland Browns fan, are you really ready to take the heat that Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs are going to put on you every down of the game?
Final question, Stan, I'll let you go. Last year in the postseason, the Chiefs played three games. They fell behind double digits in all three. Tells me the game plan going in wasn't perfect. And watching those games, the effort, by and large, was not as good as the opponents in all three games. What, they came back and won them all and won the Super Bowl. Why was that last year, and do they fix that this year?
Well, I think it's hard to determine how that all unfolded last year. I think that, for instance, I don't count the 49ers Super Bowl game in that category because I think that was a legitimate foe that was every bit as good as the Chiefs. And it's a miracle that the Chiefs won in the fourth quarter. The 49ers should have won that game, but they didn't. The Texans are not a very good football team. So when the Chiefs fell behind, I always thought that they were going to come back to win, even when they were 24-0 behind. And Tennessee is a good opponent, but not a dominant AFC championship level game. So each of these games has its own story. And it's hard for me to figure out what the mentality was of the Chiefs. But they're a whole different group this year. That's the thing. They are completely different than they were last year. They're like a snake that left their skin behind. They are now Super Bowl champions. Everybody's been shooting at them all year long. They know what it's like to be the best team and know it all. It's all about them. It has nothing to do with the opponent. There's no Belichick, no Brady, none of that stuff. So I am interested to see how it turns out this year, Kevin, because I don't see any correlation. I think this Chiefs team could come out slow, and the reason why they might come out slow, if they do, I think it's more about the sequencing in. They didn't get a week off, Kevin. They got 2 weeks off before they played this game. Is it good to not play football for 3 weeks? I wonder about that. You know, will the Chiefs be a little rusty having not played their starters for a long, long time? I know Andy Reid, with 1 week off, is poetry in motion, okay? They dominate people when he has 1 week off in the regular season, etc. But Patrick Mahomes hasn't played for 2 weeks. So that would be my question. But I'm waiting to see how the Chiefs play in this ball game. And Kevin, I find no correlation to what they were last year, because last year there was still time trying to be the team that thought they were the best but still wondered about the Patriots and were they going to make it to the Super Bowl, was something crazy going to happen. Now they flat out know they're the best, and it's a whole different mentality.
Winning back-to-back Super Bowls is hard, Stan. It hasn't been done in quite a while. You're the best, buddy. I can't thank you enough for your time joining us after the national title game and breaking down the college football championship and the season, and we look forward to talking with you throughout the playoffs. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay, thank you, Kevin.
All right, take care. There is Stan Weber on Kevin Kietzman Has Issues. He's the best I know at talking football. He knows more than anybody I know. That's why our friends at Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, and Excelsior Springs like to present Stan Weber every week right here on Kevin Kietzman Has Issues. Roberts Robinson makes it easy for you. What does make it easy mean? It means if you'd like to get your car serviced, they'll come pick it up at your house, take it to the dealership, perform the service, and bring it back to you. If you don't want to leave home, if you don't like leaving home, if you know somebody who's elderly or, you know, doesn't want to drive to Excelsior Springs, or you live in a little bit of a rural area, they will come get your vehicle, repair it, maintain it, whatever service you need to have done on your car, put new brakes, new tires, oil changes, tune-ups, whatever it may be, then they'll bring it back to you. That's making it easy. That's what Mike Robinson's all about at Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, in Excelsior Springs. Do not go to sleep on that service department. There is nobody in our area that works harder to repair your car properly for the lowest price and the best service. And they prove it by coming and getting your car for you if you can't. Unbelievable. Who does that? RobertsRobinson.com for more information. BeStock.net, the outlet store in Olathe. BeStock.net is an online electronics discounter. They ship great electronics all over the country. Apple computer products, LG, Vizio, Samsung TVs, Dell, HP, Lenovo. But now they have an outlet store in Olathe because basically they've turned the front part of their warehouse for their online business into an outlet store for all of us. So there's no shipping cost if you come buy it there. Right now for the playoffs, this is crazy. Samsung 85-inch Class 8 4K UHD TVs, $1,599. The lowest price anywhere in the world you can get those is $2,000, and that's at kind of the open box site for Best Buy. You save $400 over that and no shipping. If you can pick this up and get it home, Samsung 85-inch Class 8 4K UHD TV, $1,599. They've also still got the Apple AirPod Pros for $159. BeStock.net, outlet store in Olathe, 14680 South Flaming Road. And my friends at Fry Orthodontics, Jeremy Fry and his team have 12 area locations for your convenience, featuring Invisalign, the easier way. It takes a little less time. It's a little less intrusive. And, of course, it looks better when you're getting that perfect smile at Fry Orthodontics. They'll feature the Invisalign products for your teenager or for you, where your smile is just the start. The first appointment is free. Just mention KKHI, and they'll have you in there for free on that first appointment at Fry Orthodontics, where your smile is just the start. Football this weekend, of course, 2 o'clock Sunday, the Chiefs play the Browns at Arrowhead Stadium, and it will be interesting to see if Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas makes an appearance at the game. We have now learned that the mayor has done it again. Yes, our favorite mayor, the mayor that went to the Black Lives Matter march last summer at the Nichols Fountain and did not wear a mask while everyone else was wearing a mask. He went to the lake and took a picture with a bunch of ladies from Lee's Summit without a mask while having a mask mandate in Kansas City and all these shutdown rules he has, 25% capacity in this business. You got to close at 10 o'clock because COVID comes out at 10. All these things. And now we've learned that at the height of all this and all of the closings and all of the restrictions and all of the everything that Mayor Quentin Lucas was preaching to all of us, he went to the very first Chiefs game of the season. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. The liberals were against it. Governor Parson is the one who made it possible for 16,000 fans to be at Arrowhead Stadium. Big-time political pressure from the governor to allow this to happen. And the liberals hated it, and they wanted Arrowhead closed, and they wanted no fans because they're so embarrassed at the Kansas City Star and all the places of higher liberal elitism in Kansas City that in Los Angeles and New York, there are no fans. We look really bad here in Kansas City because we have fans, so we're not as liberal as them, and they can see it. Oh, but big-time liberal Quentin Lucas went to the game because guess what? Being a Chiefs fan is much more fun than COVID-19. Yes, it is. I'm not even going to bag on the guy for going. I'm happy he went. If I was the mayor, I would have gone. So don't mistake me here. And he went to the last game at Arrowhead. He's been a couple of times this year, and he's talking about going to the playoff game Sunday, and the Kansas City Stars editorial board, their heads are exploding over this. They can't believe their liberal mayor has gone against them with all their COVID restrictions. Go to the game, mayor. Go. Just be more honest in the other policies. Back this crap off. Open the places after 10 o'clock. Shut the capacity regulations. We've got vaccines out there, and if people haven't taken the vaccine yet and they want to stay home, they can stay home. It's available to anyone. A way bigger number of Kansas Cityans have had COVID already than you think. We've had it. I don't count under the test, but I had it. This is all just so ridiculous at this point. Go to the game, mayor. Go to the game. Live your life. I'm actually happy that you're a mayor that loves sports. I think if you changed some of your liberal policies, you could help get some more sports to Kansas City. Maybe the NBA would consider coming here if you backed off your liberal policies. It's possible, but they're not under the things that you're doing. Live your life. Be your best self. But for crying out loud, don't be the mayor that restricts us. And then you go to the lake without a mask. You go to the march without a mask. You go to the Chiefs without a mask. Don't do it. Don't be that guy. Don't be the hypocrite. I'm open to you, Mayor Lucas. We are all open to you. We're open to you if you're honest. Move to the middle on some of these things. Move to the middle and be honest and say, look, I don't want to be locked down either. I like going to the lake with COVID-19. I like going to the rally at the Nichols Fountain under COVID-19. And I like going to the Chiefs under COVID-19. Be that guy. Say it. Say it. I'm not locking down completely. I am not doing it. I'm not the lockdown mayor. I can't live my life that way. I'm young. I'm vibrant. I'm enjoying being the mayor. I want to go see people and be around them. And I want to continue to be the mayor. Great. Be that mayor. Damn it. Step up and say, I want the rest of you to live your best life too. And go live it. And stop with some of your policies. Move to the middle. This is your chance to show that you're different. That you're not a partisan hack and a hypocrite. This is your chance. Right now, it's playoff week. Maybe step forward and say, you know what? If we get the AFC Championship game, maybe we got to think about another 10,000 fans in there. We're okay with this. We've not had any outbreaks because of Arrowhead. There's been no problem at Arrowhead Stadium this year. Maybe you ought to step up as an mayor and say, you know what? Maybe we should find another 10,000 and get them out there. And maybe it should be give them to big brothers, big sisters or something like that. Give away 5,000 tickets. Have some young big brothers take some kids out to Arrowhead for the game and get some normalcy back in this thing. Chiefs would gladly donate those tickets. Gladly. Do something creative. Be different. Show us that you are not a partisan hack. Just do it. Because you don't like these rules and you don't follow them. That's done. That horse left the barn. That's gone. You don't follow your own rules and you're not going to. Nobody's locking Quentin Lucas down. You're going to Chiefs games. You're going to the lake. You're going to rallies. You're doing all this stuff. Don't do it to the rest of us. Step up and say, you know what? It's been good. We can handle this now. Stay home if you're at risk until you get the vaccine. Stay home. We're rolling out the vaccine. Stay home. It's just a few more weeks until you'll get it. Just stay home. But if you want to go live and you want to go to the game and you want to go live your life, go live it. That is a very reasonable policy at this point. I don't see how anybody could possibly argue that one. I'd love to see more fans at Arrowhead next week for the AFC title game if indeed the Chiefs can beat the Bills. Don't forget, on Tuesdays, Kevin Keatsman has issues. The patron podcast is Between the Lines 2.0. Danny Klinkscale joins me. We've got a lot to talk about today about censorship and things of that nature. So that is ahead on Kevin Keatsman has issues at the patron side. If you want to become a patron, go to www.kkhasissues.com. Click on the patron button for $5. You get the bonus programming. And I did a podcast yesterday for patrons as well. We're doing another one here on Tuesday. And we're going to ratchet the content up here in the new year. We've already started that, so we hope you're enjoying that. A few of you have had difficulty listening on your phones. I can help guide you through that a little bit. The best way to listen is on a desktop. It's easier, but you can listen on your phone. You just get an email alert. It says, listen here. You just have to be logged into the Podbean. When you sign up, you're going to have a username and a password. And so you'll have to do that when you listen on your phone. Some of you had difficulty with that, but it's doable. There's no technical problem on this end. You can do it. And the content's really good, and it's there every single week. Two or three, four times a week we do something at the patron site, and we hope that you enjoy that as well. Just sign up at kkhasissues.com for as little as $5 a month. If you want to pay more, you can, but $5 a month is the minimum we ask for the patron programming, which will be up in just a few hours this afternoon at Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.